Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 105.
It's a morning show?
Morning show, or maybe like a funny drag car, you know what I mean? Yeah. Big Daddy Don Garland's in his
Sunday, Sunday.
Yeah, a lot of energy coming out of the gate, especially with you getting over a cold.
I know. Well, I went to the chiropractor yesterday. I got adjusted, and I'm telling you, within 24 hours of getting adjusted, every time if I'm sick, it's just my system lines up, and I get better much quicker.
So wait, you get sick first, then you go to the chiropractor?
Well, that's what he calls his heroin dealer.
Yes. Yeah, the chiropractor. I needed to get adjusted.
Yeah.
It's ixnay by the chiropractor.
I go in there, start scratching at my arm. Hey, man, I need adjusted.
My elbow is a little out of joint.
Well, let's try to get that lined up for you.
Yeah, man. I just need a little adjustment.
Something on the phone.
That's right. Unbelievable.
So big shout outs to everyone that came out to Bridgetown to see.
Oh, fantastic time.
It was such a blast. That's the second year in a row we've done it. That episode with Janine Garofalo and Doug Benson will be available. It's our first ever. Going to charge $1.99 for it. It'll be in the albums section. The
Look
comedy.
At you guys go.
We're trying. We got bills. I got some. I went through a divorce, so I need some fucking money.
I know it. Three bedroom up the street that I used to own.
Which somebody put on Twitter. Grandma, it seems more angry since his divorce. I love it. I'm trying to stay light and happy, you guys.
Yeah, you go,
what you don't
guy.
Know is he was kind of this angry during, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's weird.
You don't remember.
You would think a bad marriage and financial trouble would make a guy easier to deal with.
Yeah.
Nope. Not even.
All the adjustments in the world didn't help.
Boy, that's when I had my chiropractic issues. That's when I started going to the
cracking of the back. The cracking of the back.
Janine came into the last minute too.
She came in the last minute. Steve Agee was going to do it, but he had to fly out and do somewhere else. So that
this is a very special episode too. It's a summer movie preview. We go through the summer movies and with Janine, and then we play Leonard Maltin with Doug.
Yeah, it's an hour and 20-minute show.
Sounds hilarious.
It is great. It's a good time. And if there's people out there like, I don't want to pay, you don't have to. We'll still have plenty of free shows for you.
It's about 1 out of 100.
Yeah, this is our 105th free episode. Starting, there is one paid
that you pay for
and 105 that are free.
You get it 105 for free. That's pretty good.
So, and it'll be in iTunes, but also we'll have it on our site too.
We'll have it on our site as well. That'll probably be in 2 weeks or less.
I want to say you guys have the greatest fans because I was in Sacramento, California, Sunday night, showing our documentary, The Truth Is Out There, at the Guild Theater. And who walks in but a girl goes, oh, hey, I listen to you on Comedy Film Nerds. I'm like, what?
Awesome.
And I thought maybe you guys gave a shout out for me that I was going to be up there, but you guys had no idea. I had barely an idea I was there.
No, but the NSA knew.
NSA knew. Of course they did. But she was lovely.
I got to say, like,
we do have the best fans. There's no question.
And I got to, like, it's the more we do this, the more it's apparent how great our fans are and how smart they are. Like, the whole grammar thing was awesome. I had my grammar corrected. And then we have a fan in Japan, Sanai, who wrote, I don't feel that bad about my grammar because the whole episode where I talk about how horrible my grammar is. So my grammar is worse than somebody whose English is a second language.
Yeah, there you go. So that's got to make you feel good.
That makes me feel smart.
Where'd you go to school?
Public school.
In Grafttown.
Grafttown.
So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we haven't done it yet, but we'd like to introduce Dean Haglund.
Hi,
our
everybody.
Guest.
Thank Dean you Haglund. Very much. It's great to be here. It's like I've always been here.
Well, you sleep in the garage.
I know. Since that divorce. Yeah, that's right.
When you lost the house three blocks down.
Three blocks down. Ixnay.
He showed up.
He was like, move the gargoyle. I'm coming in.
Yeah. That's it. Get out.
Modern day Felix Unger. Two nerds living together.
Nerds. One gargoyle.
One gargoyle. It's the worst sitcom ever.
Oh, real quick, I want to give a couple shout outs too.
Yes.
Last night, Doug and I were in the Improv in Brea, California, and it was a fun little show on a Monday night.
Good. Oh, cool. A Monday night show.
Doug has been doing these off-night shows. I mean, he's actually tuning up. He's recording his CD on Friday, so he just wanted to add a show. But he's been doing off-nights Monday, Tuesday nights, and 4:20 in the afternoon on Saturday and Sunday, and it is great.
Is that right?
Because you don't get bachelorette parties just people who are just like, who are these guys?
Right.
You get fans, like diehard fans.
Are really into the show.
Yeah.
Actually, and
how's the advertising? Like, just tweeting?
Twitter.
That it, eh?
I mean, that's...
And is he... was the room packed?
No, it wasn't packed. We had probably, 150 people on a Monday night. But, I mean, he can do 150, 200 people just about anywhere. And it's awesome. It's just all fans of his podcast and some of our fans who, there's a lot of...
It's nice to see that mix, too, like when we all kind of do the same shows and mix around it, especially at the comedy festivals. There was a guy that had a car that had all the podcast logos on the hood.
That was the coolest thing. He works for one of those companies that wraps...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The car stuff?
Shrink wrap car, whatever. Yeah.
Logo things.
Logo advertising.
And he's in Portland, so he's going to send us a photo...
He's giving us the door.
Yeah, he's going to put...
Because
he goes, yours was on here, I feel embarrassed, but then I put Adam Carolla's over it. And I was like,
went,
dude!
How dare you?
What?
So he goes, I'm going to give you the whole door. So,
that's awesome.
Folks, if you want to put our logo on anything weird, your tattoo, your baby's head, or whatever...
Yeah. We'll share it and show a picture.
Yeah, we'll put it on Facebook.
Yeah. Facebook. Everybody will love to look at that. And your baby will not be scarred.
No, your baby will be fine.
But the Bridgetown Comedy Festival was really fun. Then we did some individual comedy shows, but just kind of hanging out with everybody and doing the shows and meeting the fans. It was really, really fun.
It was a blast. And the episode of Doug Loves Movies that I recorded with Doug on Saturday and Matt Besser and James Adomian and Big Irish J, I believe that episode is up if you go to DougLovesMovies.com, that episode that we recorded there. So it was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So now, Dean, just before we get into the movies, now you have your own podcast still going, Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
And how is that going right now?
Very good. Me and Phil Lernest discussing many things. We've gone on a bit of serious tangent lately. He is a certified violence prevention specialist. So we've gone into,
What does that entail?
That entails him going to high schools and speaking to students and stuff about how to prevent violence, how not to get into situations of female violence and all of this. So
how long has he been doing that?
He's been doing that for like about 20 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's certified. And so, it becomes these interesting conversations, particularly when it intersects with celebrity violence, Bobby Brown, Whitney Houston, Rihanna, all of these things. Wow. And then it goes into larger issues. So we cut celebrity news into violence prevention philosophy and civil discourse.
Now, when he addresses like a bunch of high school kids, is he basically just like, don't be pussies? Like, how does that work?
No, there's actual methods and things you do to...
I come from the Great Santini School.
A public school. Yes, the Great Santini. Don't screw it up. No. He says very specifically that, violence is about power and how to like recognize... that if power is being taken away from you, addressing it with more violence is counterproductive, these sort of things. So it's really quite a fascinating. And each one he goes into, there's actually a documentary that just came out recently about violence prevention specialists in New York City that is really quite fascinating. It was exactly what he does. And the name of that documentary is now escaping me.
But I'm sure it's great.
It's totally great.
So look for that. Now escaping me.
Yeah, no. Yes, hilarious. It was out last year, and it was almost nominated for an Oscar in the documentary.
But you were telling us before the show that you guys have been, part of your podcast now is you've been recording Q&As of after screenings.
Of Truth Is Out There.
Of Truth Is Out There. Our documentary on conspiracies and consciousness and comedy. We go around to different festivals and show it and stuff like that. And then our Q&As are always so fascinating that we often bring our recording equipment and then record the Q&A and make that our podcast. So,
So give us a taste of like some of the crazy Q&As you guys
have had. Let's see. Everybody's always, our documentary is 2 hours and 21 minutes long.
Yes.
And it has all the modern day conspiracy. You got Jordan Maxwell, Dr. Roger Lear, Alex Jones is in it because... Uh-huh. I get to interview him on his radio show, and in it, I'm in the little booth in Texas, and he gets really impassioned about why he does what he does and why he's a true believer, too. He's on the air 3 hours a day fighting the man, and I go, so why do you do this? Like, why is this truth so important to you? and he ramps it up in that little tiny studio that literally blows my hair back like a Maxell ad. And then he goes, and I'm going to ask him a question. He goes, okay, we'll be right back after this. Hey, man, just ask a question. If you like, he totally takes it down, going, if you want to talk or jump in, feel free. And it, like the contrast between me going, I'll tell you why I'm angry. You know, and I just
knocked, he just knocked over the microphone. Wow.
That's how angry. That's how
passionate. Now that's improv.
Yeah, there you go. And so that sort of thing, everybody goes, so is Alex Jones really a jerk to you all the time? And I go, no, we're actually really good friends. And then we get into discussions of Alex Jones and, you know, what he does and that kind of thing. So that gets in a podcast.
How many times at these Q&As is it somebody, because I just noticed this of Q&As in general, where the person doesn't really have a question, they just want to tell you how much
tell
they
you
know.
A story. Yeah.
Yeah, or...
You must get that a lot. Yeah, like, I have a theory on string physics.
My brother's a conspiracy theorist. And, you know, it's like our UFOs being under... there's a runway being built under our house for UFOs. This one guy had a UFO.
And that's when you just go, yes.
Yes, well, we'd like to see that sometime with our camera. So let's book that appointment. So, but no, more of the questions are the film opens up so many questions that everybody goes, well, and they're quite overwhelmed because you see 2 hours and 21 minutes of everything. I mean, goes from UFOs to 9/11 to Tesla coil to shamanic ayahuasca. Southern Peru, right. You know, all of that. So all of these things come up, then the questions sort of become, what do you believe? What is belief? How do you know what truth is? So these become these large philosophical debates that are quite fascinating.
That sounds awesome. Film Q&As, we've been to a bunch of festivals. Yeah. And sometimes
how much money did it cost?
How do you get famous? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. What's the budget? How long did it take to film? Yeah. Those are your two questions. You're always like, it took the length of time to finish the movie, and a budget is what you use to determine how much the movie is. Yeah, right.
Well, now, since we're talking about the movie, too, you did a conspiracy movie, and now every once in a while you think maybe you're on the government radar. Now.
I know I am on the government radar. It's beyond, I think it. You know, I have friends in Homeland Security. They've told me they know more about me than they should, theoretically. And
they go, how are your two dogs doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why are you sleeping with that gargoyle in your buddy's garage? Why are you doing that?
Why? You should stop doing that.
You used to like pepperoni. Why don't you like pepperoni anymore?
Get that thing looked at on your ass. Yeah. Seriously. You should. What? And then, my emails take longer to get through, like all of that stuff. But, you know, there's an NSA filtering system, you know, and certain...
What did you say it was called? Black Widow or something?
Yes. Yeah, it's the Black Widow. It's a giant computer that they use.
Thanks, Chris. Now we're going to get filtered.
Exactly. Seriously, this
ding,
podcast...
there's a red flag just went
There's a word filtration system so that if you say any certain words... Like Dean Haglund will be one, but then that the computer will then pull it out of the, you know, all of our internet channels go through pipes. Remember pipes and all that?
What about Michael Bay is a replicant? What is that? Is that...
That goes right to Michael Bay.
It goes right to Michael Bay. Michael Bay. He has his own Black Widow.
He has his own pipe.
That's right. It just goes, someone else knows.
Yeah.
That guy is going to get it. So, that whole thing goes on all the time.
You're saying just email from, you know, your girlfriend in the same house to you.
Yeah, same network. Imagine that you're both plugged into like the same router and it still takes about 17 minutes for that email to get to you.
Wow.
Right.
See, if we do that in the garage, I would blame the gargoyle.
Yes.
Is what I would blame.
The gargoyle filter.
You guys are going to be filtered because I've been talking to you about
God
it.
God damn it.
No, sorry.
Way to go.
That's way to, you brought it up.
It's our fault.
NSA, I've done USO shows. I'm all for you.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm all in favor of.
Are you kidding? That put you on a target now.
Of course.
Like, well, you had a guy follow you, you said.
Yeah. Where? Over there?
I was there. I was in, I was walking around a base in, it was southeast Afghanistan, this small little base. And I was just my first time there and I had my camera with me. So I was just like, hey, tourist, you know? And the bigger bases, they were like, oh, sure, look at this. And the smaller base, they're like, what's that? Why was the camera? Who's this? What are you? And I was just like getting like soldier interviews. I literally was being a dumb tourist, you know? And I'm talking to this guy, and all of a sudden this other guy walks up. It's in the documentary, but I completely black out his face.
Right.
So I'm like, I don't want to mess with that. And he's like, what are you doing? Who are you talking to? And I'm just like, oh. And I immediately like turn the camera off. I'm like, I'm just doing shows for the USO. And then this other guy comes out of a room that has a sign on it that says, do not enter under any circumstances. And then he comes out and this guy starts speaking like another language to me to test me. And
oh,
I was
really?
Like, I don't know.
What's, parlez-vous français?
I was just like, I think it was Korean.
Oh, really?
And they
did he go, hello, governor.
And I was like, hello, matey. I'm with the special ops, I am.
Consider yourself a meat.
Consider yourself one of the spy family. So I think the NSA shut us off. My accents right. made them go, we can't listen yes, to these idiots no. anymore.
The artful Dodger videographer.
So, yeah, and I remember then we were, so he's asking me all these questions, and I was just like, I'm sorry, I'm just a comedian, and I'm just, you know, and he's like, oh, okay. So then we had to get on another helicopter to fly to a bigger base, Kandahar. He just happened to be on my helicopter with
of
me.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And we're flying doors open.
Did you see him throw another guy out before he actually got on the plane?
Yeah.
Hey, you're not in this flight. Get
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And there were, you know, there were some other, like, people on the helicopter that I think were like military, but they seemed like they were like desk types, or they were observers rotating in. Anyway, they hadn't been on a helicopter before on
right.
Blackhawk. So everyone was like video camera shooting. We had
right,
doors
right.
open, and I'm shooting out the right side. And this whatever special CIA dude was
on OGA, the other government agency.
He was definitely OGA. He was definitely other governmental agency. He goes, he motions like, do you want me to use your camera to get this side? And I was like, I'm good, thanks.
You're yanking.
I knew that was just like, oh no, my giant magnet, whoops. Like,
I don't know how it erased everything.
And then I was on stage the next night.
He's in front row.
He was in the back. He was walking
oh,
around
no,
watching
really?
The show.
Really?
And I was just like,
going, holy crap.
Okay.
Right.
And I'm sure they were like, oh, he's a member of the Sierra Club. This filthy hippie.
That hippie bastard.
Son of a bitch.
What a bastard.
He's got shoes made out of hemp. What a weirdo.
Well, one of the things that Dean goes through in the documentary is that how the pilot for Lone Gunman actually had the terrorist attack of the towers being destroyed
right.
by airplanes.
Do you remember
you guys
that?
Wrote that? But yeah, that's right. Before 9/11
yeah,
ever
like
happened.
Like 8 months before it happened, the pilot of our spinoff series, The Lone Gunman, the pilot episode, we stop a plane from flying into the World Trade Center, and part of the script was that they were doing that in order to start an international war on terror. And then, at the last minute, the lone gunman managed to hack into the system
and
stop it, and the plane just flies directly over top the World Trade Center at the very last second. And then 8 months later, it happens. And Condoleezza Rice going, there was no way we could have known. There was nothing in popular culture that would have... Cause they, hey, what about our series? Nobody watched it. Nobody's watching it.
Nothing in popular culture, not some pilot that no one saw, but in real mainstream.
That was 13 episodes of pure comedy conspiracy entertainment. I'm supporting that. But yeah, but you know, that that was one of those weird, unique things where, you know,
and then Fox wouldn't let you have the footage for the documentary.
Well, yeah. Well, that's a licensing issue, but that was also.
Is it?
Is it really? So we had to get a very famous storyboard artist to actually storyboard in reverse the episode that we were in to put it in the documentary. So we have storyboards of the footage.
To get around not having the footage is great.
And
it's a great sequence.
That is my, you know, my graphic novel that I'm doing. Is then based on these conspiracies that I learned about the Iraq War in 2003, why we had to march in 2003. And it wasn't about oil, and it wasn't about any terror, but in fact, Sumerian text and Saddam Hussein thinking he's the reincarnation of King Nebuchadnezzar. Do you know this?
No!
Oh my God. Well, this is the... You know, we're getting to my Kickstarter thing.
Right,
yeah,
let's go into it.
That. I got a Kickstarter campaign going.
We're talking about it now.
Let's do it now because it's a perfect tie-in.
Sure.
Because you're talking Middle East. The whole graphic novel is this. We couldn't actually put it in because it was so huge, and we couldn't put it in our conspiracy documentary. But as we talked to certain people like William Henry and Jordan Maxwell and these guys, they started inferring that in March 2003 there was a rush to get into Iraq, not so much to stop Baghdad, but in fact, 40 miles south-southeast. If you look at all the old news reports, it's like, troops got bogged down 40 miles south-southeast of Baghdad. where theoretically nothing is there, but maybe Babylon sort of is in that area. But there's this idea out there that during the embargo, Saddam Hussein was in just collecting all the Sumerian text from all the museums around the world. He had the largest collection of Sumerian text that he was analyzing, because in it apparently were instructions for this gate of Ishtar, this fiery gate that opened to a fourth dimensional portal that offered anyone who got through that unlimited power and unlimited knowledge.
But you have to actually watch the movie Ishtar.
Yeah, and part of the knowledge there.
The movie Ishtar, that's the desert scene.
That's the desert scene.
Open up a fourth dimension.
Yes. No, that's just an unfortunate coincidence that the Gate of Ishtar was the name of that movie. But it was that was in the Museum of Berlin, and he actually purchased that for a huge sum of money to bring it back to Babylon. And he so believed it that in Babylon, there's a plaque that says King Nebuchadnezzar in the reign of Saddam Hussein. So he so thought he was the reincarnation. And then who else to fight that but a guy who's a born-again leading the world superpower and military force to go in. And what proof do we have? The fiery gate, the gate of Ishtar, is guarded by two gods, a male god, Jawa, and the female god, Shakti, or Shakana. And what do we call the bombing campaign? Shakana, going, we are the other guard at the gate that will not let you in. And King Nebuchadnezzar enslaved all the tribes of the Bible except one, the Moabs. And what do we call the 21,000-pound bomb that we test in Florida, of all places? The mother of all bombs, the Moabs. We are the tribe you will not enslave. So all of these things are all layered in throughout that whole 2003 Iraq invasion that are so bizarre that all connect, that just blow your mind, that we're putting into this graphic novel.
You are the best conspiracy theorist ever. You really
that
are.
That is compelling.
Isn't it? And so we're doing it. So it's a story of actually three computer nerds that have an underground newspaper that have no way resemble the lone gunman.
No, not at all. They're the flown brunmen.
That's something completely different. And then, so it's those three guys. And then we go in and we basically tell this whole story. And it's much longer than I can even tell.
So it's
going to
be a graphic novel. You guys are raising it. It's on Kickstarter.
It's on Kickstarter right now.
Where do people find it?
You go to my website, deanhaglund.com.
You go
to Kickstarter, and you can just type in the search. You can look Shock and Awesome. Is that what it's going to be called? Shock and Awesome. And then where else do I have it linked? All over Facebook.
Well, there's some great rewards, too. You get, like, the higher up you go, you can get, like, original artwork. Dean will draw for you and
all
that stuff.
Not just your $11 student special range, you get original artwork. A little wallet-sized, little drawing from Dean Haglund. You start with original artwork.
If you give $1 million, you will be Nebuchadnezzar.
Yes.
That's right.
You will get the fiery gate.
You get the fiery gate. We'll hand that to you. That's right. No, it's original artwork all the way through, and then the graphic novel, of course, and then my other comic book, Why the Lone Gunman Was Canceled.
Which we have right here.
You have right here. I'm giving that as a level of benefit. Mm-hmm. And then I just realized, somebody just came in on the $1,000 range, which you get an original oil painting and plus lots of prints and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he requested that his name be one of the characters in the graphic novel. And I agreed. So one of the new benefits that I'm just going to update when I get home will be that you get your name in the graphic novel at the $1,000 level.
If you want your name in a novel, folks, go to deanhaglund.com. Mm-hmm.
Now, is it going to be just one? Is it going to be a series, or is it just going to be?
Yeah. Technically, well, we have a script now, so we're going to break it down into like the whole how many pages it is, and then if it's going to be like a 500-page graphic novel, we think that's a little heavy to ship out. So then we'd break that down into
two. Now I will make the announcement here. This is pretty exciting. When the Kickstarter campaign is done and the graphic novel is done, we will be selling it here on the site.
Yay!
We'll have it here in Comedy Film.
You can get all the Dean Haglund stuff. You can get Truth Is Out There right now, the Lone Gunman comic, and go. You guys are obviously. No Kickstarter. You've been very supportive. You guys helped make the LA Podfest happen.
I know. How
sweet
is that?
Such a cool
amazing.
Thing. So the Kickstarter is so great. Like, I have a friend in a band who's raising money. The world record. They actually, Andy Creighton did the music on Afghanistan. It's an awesome thing. It's absolutely an awesome thing because, like,
there's... And even if you don't want to contribute, take a look at my 2-minute video because I heard it's one of the funniest Kickstarter campaign pitches that is out there.
It's just...
But you got low. I mean, people could throw in $5, stuff like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Like and the they still get one. Stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Right. There's low. I started at $11, but you can go less than that if you want, and you can go more than that. And there's plenty of levels. And then there's also secret envelopes from my X-File GAC bag.
Yes.
I'm not saying what you might get in the secret envelope.
But the NSA knows.
That's do they?
Alien sperm.
That's right.
You can breed with an alien. Finally.
Finally.
Actually, didn't those secret envelopes just kind of show up at your house like from the NSA? They're like, here, you can give these out.
Yeah, that's right. The stack came in the mail. I don't know how they even got my address. Yeah. Oh, of course they did. That's right.
All right, well, let's talk some movies.
Absolutely. Yes. Let's get into it. We got some great movies to talk about.
All right, Chris.
You saw relatively speaking, when I say great.
Right. You saw The Three Stooges.
I saw The Three Stooges, and, you know, I wasn't really sure. I was trying to keep an open mind with this movie. I really was.
How long?
I really was.
How long did it make? Past the trailer?
Keep an open mind. This sounds like you were put on a horrible blind date.
You know what? This movie had a great personality.
You guys have so much in common.
Yeah, I'm a fan of The Three Stooges. Always a huge fan of The Three Stooges growing up. I still watch them, introducing them to my kids now. And
Don't they love it?
Yeah. And the first thing my daughter said when she saw the trailers, I don't want to see that. I don't like the way they look. You know, so it was like, I've seen Three Stooges. So the question with this movie is like, not whether it's good or bad. It's like, what was the point? Like, literally, why would you make this movie? And by the way, the movie is bad.
All right, let's start there.
It's definitely,
and by the way, it's still lost to the Hunger Games.
Yes, of course.
Hunger Games did $21 million that weekend. And it's what, third or fourth week now? And... fucking Stooges did 17.
Yeah, although 17's not bad for considering. I thought it would.
How much did that cost to make it?
It couldn't have been that much.
No.
It couldn't have been that much.
So it looks like a dollar.
Now,
it's a YouTube video.
Yeah, there's just some really, really weird choices. First of all, it's like, would you watch? Like, what would you make a Marx Brothers movie? It's like, no. Or, I'm good. There's a new Abbott and Costello movie. Without Abbott and Costello, yes, no one will notice.
You're doing their jokes.
Yeah. And it was, you know, the gags, you're looking at it. I will say, and it's not the actor's fault. I'll say they did a really good job portraying the characters, like, you know, Sean Hayes, Chris Diamantopoulos, and Will Sasso. They tried to channel the characters as best they could, but they couldn't because they're not the Three Stooges. It's so simple. I mean,
did you see Chris Diamantopoulos do Robin Williams in the?
No, I didn't see that. But you said he was
the
really
Robin
good.
Williams story, a dead on Robin Williams impersonation. Like, and it was his early days doing Mork and Mindy and his stand up act. It was like, holy crap, that guy was awesome.
Knows slapstick.
I'd love to see that. I'd love to see a story about Robin.
And here's what the disconnect with this movie was: is that first of all, I don't know who thought it was a good idea to have Larry David play a nun in a shrieky voice. That was like, you're like,
Larry David
enough.
Did.
Yeah. It had. I didn't get that at all. But if it's such a compelling story, The Three Stooges. You know, you've got these guys who started on vaudeville and became, you know, successes, and they made these amazing shorts for years and years and years and years.
200 short films.
You know when they started failing? When they made movies. When they actually made those horrible movies. They're too long because the whole point was that they're short, they're funny, and they were really, really amazing. But if you made a movie about The Three Stooges and you had these actors who played the characters really well and combined it with the actual drama behind the scenes, how they sold away their rights, the families ended up suing each other. It's if you, you know, juxtapose the drama of the real life with the slapstick humor that made everyone laugh and happy and all that stuff, then you have a really interesting, compelling movie.
So there's none of that.
No. Yeah. It was just like, oh, here's the Three Stooges. We're casting new people and we're just putting them in these adventures. I mean, the plot is paper thin, and to be generous, but that doesn't even matter. You're watching this whole movie going, well, I don't. There's no point that this exists.
There was a made-for-TV movie.
Yes.
There was.
About Michael Chiklis.
Yeah.
Wasn't Chiklis.
Yes. And that was actually went behind the scenes and showing how they're fighting with the studios and not getting money.
That went behind the scenes, too. It wasn't a great movie, but it was interesting because it showed you the behind the scenes. Now, if you took that formula and put a big budget, you know, spin on it.
Make a biopic.
I'd be really interested in seeing that. Now, the one, there's a couple redeeming things here. One of them is that, you know, this will raise a little bit more awareness in the Stooges. People go seek out the original shorts, which are fantastic. And I will say they finally released them chronologically, where you can get like volume 2, 3, 4, 5, and you can actually get the date ranges. So you can actually finally collect them all. It used to be like, oh, well, this is like, you know, a random selection of shorts. And then you get the next DVD, it's a random selection of shorts. Now they're actually, you can get them all and in the order that they were made, which is fantastic.
Right.
The other thing is every once in a while, this movie had a really, really funny and inspired scene, but I'm talking like a couple of minutes out of 90. You know, that it was
can
mostly
I get that
really
just
dumb.
Edit it onto YouTube,
yeah, yeah.
Somehow?
And there's one scene that I swear to God, I was laughing hysterically. I mean, out of the whole movie, there was one scene that made me laugh hysterically, and it was that when Mo gets cast on the Jersey Shore. And it's all those idiots that he's, you know, he's with in the house,
yeah.
And he just starts slapping them and beating the shit out of them. That really made me laugh. That made me laugh. When I was laughing at that, it occurred to me, this is what the Stooges were. It's just goofy kind of slapstick in a weird situation. And, you know, you don't make a feature film out of that. And you also look at the cultural aspect of it and the time zone. Not the time zone, but the time that these were made.
Right.
It was, you know, the era. Yeah, it was Depression era. Right. And you know, these were like, you know, three lovable knuckleheads that were always either trying to get a meal or a job. And, you know, they're always screwing up, but their hearts were in the right place. And, you know, it was unbelievably relatable to at the time. And it also made people laugh. So it was... How are you going to, you know, really bring that, you know, to the fore here in 2012? Now, there are ways you could do it, which is amazing. I mean, when you look at a movie like The Artist, you know, you actually
like
take silent mills.
Yeah,
yeah, if you did something a little more interesting, like either did a biopic, or let's say you didn't do a biopic, maybe you pulled like an artist but made it like a comedy version of that with the Stooges, then that'd also be, oh, you know what, that's kind of interesting. They took, and this is what the Farley brothers unfortunately do a lot, they take the path of least resistance.
Yes, they do.
This is like the easiest way to do this. This is the quickest way to do it. And, you know, they have a lot of inspired stuff and some inspired movies. I mean, yeah. Kingpin was... fantastic. I loved Kingpin. But this is the kind of movie, it just felt, it was like this was in development forever and it just wasn't worth it. And it
is
just
it because the rights are free now, because the rights got all screwed up, that you can get the Three Stooges, isn't it like public domain even?
I don't know if it's public domain, but there are rights issues. You're right about that. Because one of the things I did read that I'll give these guys credit, the Farley brothers, is that they're giving a portion of the proceeds to the families because they got kind of screwed out of the rights. So
then I'm on board with that.
Right.
The families,
they got
the amount of money that has been made off of those guys that they haven't seen.
And they were told all the time, the monies aren't making moves.
Yeah, of course. It's like when Sony told Stan Lee Spider-Man didn't make any money.
Yeah, it was just a little indie flick.
I'd say with the writer from Forrest Gump. Like the guy who wrote the book Forrest Gump still hasn't seen a set, because you can throw your budget into, you know,
creative
deficit.
Accounting.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so easy.
So it's one of those movies. Like I said, it's not really good or bad is irrelevant. It just didn't. There wasn't really a point to it for its existence. And the other weird thing that they did is tried to kind of shoehorn it into like a family movie, because it was PG, and they're like, oh, we'll get kids, you know, to watch it. I'm like, well. You know, kids don't know who the Three Stooges are, and you know, you've got shoehorned orphans in, and like some of it was not ironic. Some of it was like, oh yeah, one of the sick orphans, and they have to try to save the place, and you know, they have those thin stories. But it also was like, well, what? First of all, this movie shouldn't really exist. But then, do you get to the point where now we don't know how to market it? On top of that, so it just proves the point that there is no point to making this movie,
right?
So. I will urge people to go and seek out the original shorts. I mean, it's the kind of movie, if you see it on a plane or you know, if it's free on Netflix, it's there's a couple of scenes that are definitely inspired, but mainly as a movie, it's just
I'm going to see it on a plane at some point this summer. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be forced in my seat headrest.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, the actors really went to they really went to acting school on these characters.
Did they
did a nice job, the three leads. But
now, did Sean Hayes actually just shaved his hair back to get that curly?
I don't know if that was a bald wig or if it was they actually shaved his head. But he, but they all. I mean, even to the voice kind of nuances and tonalities to it, they did a nice job with it. But it doesn't matter how perfect you're going to get it. You're still not the Stooges. Right, it doesn't matter. And, you know, and it's more forgiving if you're doing a biopic, but if you're just, you know, imitating them.
Yeah.
It's almost like watching a cover band. You know,
exactly.
That's what kind of it felt like. I'm like, well, right.
This is Dred Zeppelin.
I'm not, you know, if I got...
What's that Beatle? Fab Foe?
Oh, there's a Fabian Foe one.
Oh, there's like a Pink Floyd one, and you're like, I kind of like this, but wait, I could watch the real thing at home. I don't know.
Okay, so, awesome.
But I wanted to see it because a lot of fans were asking about it, and I was definitely had a curiosity about it.
Awesome.
So now let's go to the horror movie that I thought would beat the Three Stooges in the box office gross,
but did not.
Cabin in the Woods.
Right.
It only made 14, and Stooges made 17.
Well, and I could see why, because this is a bugger to market without spoiling the hell out of it. And I'm the worst guy to talk about this because I'm Captain Spoiler.
Yes.
Holy crap. Do I give away things? So this is going to be very hard for me to talk about.
Under your file at the NSA, it says spoiler alert underneath.
If you want to see a movie, there's like certain guys that won't listen to my files. Exactly.
They got to filter it through, and there's a software that takes out your spoiling.
The spoilers. So if you got that software now, run it because I might screw this up.
So, all right, we're going to say right now, spoiler alert for Cabin in the Woods.
He's going to try not to.
Which means he will.
Right.
All
right.
So, yeah.
But okay, but you saw the trailer, right? It's like it looks like a very scary
cube.
Yeah. Very scary cube of a house, but it's a like teenagers in the woods in a cabin get murdered, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Like every other movie,
Sounds like fun.
Right? There's a whole nother level to it. There's another level that's not in the trailers that makes the whole movie awesome. So the movie's awesome. But there's another level to it, and it's a similar level to...
Well, you see the science fiction element in the trailer.
Briefly, you see some guy punching a...
And you see the dome come down over the house.
Yeah.
So you know that's like I was saying, the movie Cube, where they're trapped kind of in the science fiction thing.
But you don't know...
You don't know why or how.
And then here's sort of the issue that I have with it, and it's sort of what I have with Bridesmaids. It's that, you know, it's a stand-up. It's somebody's stand-up bit made into a movie, basically. So, remember Bridesmaids? It was like, Jesus, this is every chick stand-up bit I've ever seen all jammed into one giant movie about getting married and stuff. Like, holy crap. Is this how you write screenplays now? This is the same thing about some stand... Like, imagine a stand-up riffing on how the hell is every teen going into a cabin and getting murdered? Don't they know? Blah, blah, blah. You know, it'd be like that. So why don't they know? Well, there must be a... thing that then now goes into spoilers and stuff like
right?
So that's actually pretty funny. And so the movie ends, and it's got the best third act I've ever seen in a movie in a long, long time. Movies are, to my mind, are only two acts, and then the third act...
The third act always peters out.
Always peters out. Yeah. Here, no. The third act is the awesome act of it all. And this is like, they actually thought about this, because the movie suddenly ends, and you're like, wait a second... Don't worry, is this a two-hour movie? We're kind of early still. We're only like an hour and a bit in. And I'm like, oh. And then everybody's celebrating, and then it goes. And that's so hard to talk about without fucking wrecking
it. Well, that was good. You actually, I'm
impressed.
I'm intrigued to see it, and I don't feel like you ruined it.
No,
right? And it's also bloody hard to market, because Three Stooges, you can put in all your goofy, wacky... You can put the
somebody getting hit in the head with a hammer.
Yeah, here you can't put in the best scenes, because then you blow it. You're gonna blow the whole thing. So this
could be then a good word of mouth movie, because actually somebody on Twitter said, "Graham, are you guys gonna talk about how awesome Cabin in the Woods is?"
Because it is awesome. It's totally awesome. Once you see it going, you're like, "Ah, this is awesome."
Because
right?
We sent Neil to see it, but the review hasn't appeared yet, which means he's probably having trouble
really
putting it
trouble.
In the review without spoiling it. Yeah,
right,
it's taking a little extra time with
literally,
it.
Literally, I mean, when all the press I read on, they said, "Well, it's like Scream, and you break conventions and stuff like that." Which is true to a degree, but not in the capacity that they've done it in this movie.
So you're saying though, Scream at the time when it first came out was very groundbreaking.
Yes, because it was self-reflexive.
It was like postmodern.
Postmodern, where they already had the idea of the concepts of a killer, and you know who's gonna
So this movie has it has some groundbreaking stuff to it.
Yes, well, it takes that to the next level, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, in a world unto itself.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued to see it now.
If you're not a horror fan, would you enjoy this movie?
Absolutely. You probably enjoy it more, actually, if you're not a horror fan, because it sort of decimates horror conventions in a major way.
Now I'm on board, because I don't see a lot of horror movies just because I get too grossed out or whatever.
Yeah, but there's a lot of gross out scenes but they're in the context of what's happening makes it even more better.
And it's not a parody, right?
Not a parody, but
it has funny moments.
Has some funny,
funny moments and a funny conceit to it. That would be what a stand-up would do if he was talking about Cabin in the Wood type movies.
Well, you know what? Joss Whedon does a lot of that stuff, too.
He does a lot of that stuff, too. And I've seen that a lot in movies these days. And I'm thinking, why not go back to all the old stand-up bits and just, like, expand them all into movies now? Like,
make them a product locomotive.
Dude, that's what Super Jaime was a bit in Doug's act. When Super Size Me came out, Doug goes, I'm going to do a movie like Super Size Me, only I'm going to just smoke weed every day for 30 days, and we'll call it Super High Me. And the crowd would laugh, ha ha. And Michael Blyton, the director, goes, we should make that into a documentary. That's how that happened.
Are you kidding?
That was a bit of his act.
Oh, my God.
You know?
So funny.
So I'm going to... I think Palm Strike the Movie coming out.
Yeah,
Palm Strike the Movie.
Yeah, I mean, a bit in an act, and then, you know, Doug made the documentary, and it made a lot of money for the distributor.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, NSA, run a fucking check on Screen Media. All right.
NSA, check them out.
Yeah, it's great. You have now a personal relationship to the NSA that you just like.
Oh, NSA, could you pick up my dry cleaning and make sure there isn't any?
I've lost my other iPhone.
And check it for bugs.
Check it for bugs.
Can you tell me which flights I have a better chance of getting upgraded on?
Just let me know through some sort of secret Twitter account. That's great.
The NSA, actually, someone created a evil Graham Elwood Twitter account. And it's clearly a fan of this show. And I want to say, whoever you are, I love you. You're awesome.
Oh, I want to follow that.
It's amazing. It's hilarious because it's shit like Transformers out on Blu-ray. Just bought my fifth copy. You can never have too many. Hashtag Michael Bay is the best. I'm watching 13 Assassins. It's so boring. Who likes samurai movies? It's like everything that I say, they go, it is fucking hilarious. And it's awesome. They just took a picture of me, one of my headshots, and then they just drew two red horns coming out of my head. It is awesome.
That is awesome.
Whoever you are, You're great. I love you.
Thank you. It's me.
Thank you. It's the NSA. Yeah. Those guys over there are hilarious.
They're hilarious.
In their black vans, they just like jokes.
So good.
I was going to go see Lockout.
Uh-oh. What happened?
I heard it wasn't that great.
Yeah.
And then I saw a trailer for this movie called The Island President.
Oh, yes. Isn't that great?
It's a really good movie. It's a documentary.
Wait, you went to Island President?
I went to go see it instead of Lockout.
Oh, I thought you were just watching trailers.
No, I saw a trailer, and that's what motivated me to go see
Island President.
Yes.
Because this is on my plan is to see all the places that will be underwater in 5 years. So we went to Venice, and the Maldives is next.
Yeah, you absolutely should. This is within 20 years, it'll be underwater. So this is what this is. It's about this guy, Mohamed Nasheed, was a political prisoner of the Maldives. I knew about the Maldives only as a surfer.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm going to go there. And I heard it was going to be underwater. I was like, oh, my God.
Better go early.
Better go early. It's a series of about 2,000 islands in the Indian Ocean, kind of off the coast of the southern tip of India.
And all the British go there for vacation.
It's a big European
vacation spot.
How many islands?
2,000 little islands.
Little tiny islands. And they're flat. There's no rocks on them. They're all like just sandbars, basically.
Right.
That have come out of the ocean.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I didn't know this, but for 30 years, there was a, I think his name was Massoud, was a
dictator,
evil dictator.
Yeah.
And so this guy, Nasheed, started to rise up.
Has anyone ever said benevolent dictator?
Yeah, benevolent. very sweet.
Massaged everybody.
Yeah, it was great. Everybody got cookies.
And flowers.
And flowers. And if you said something bad about him, he just said, don't do that.
No.
Well, can't you use your words better?
You make Popo cry.
Popo the nice dictator. We're going to make that into a graphic novel and put it on Kickstarter.
Popo the nice dictator.
That's awesome.
So he, you know, he rallied against people. Anyway, he was in prison. He was tortured. He became president of the Maldives. And he realized, he goes, as soon as I got, I was like, it's going to be great. We're finally bringing democracy to the Maldives. It's going to be awesome. And at every cabinet meeting, every issue was an environmental one.
Yep.
We're not getting as many fish. The sea levels are rising, so the salt water is eroding beaches and messing up our crops and everything, getting into the fresh water.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh my God. So really the movie focuses on him rallying to get at the environment, the UN Environmental Summit, I forget the actual name of it, that was in Copenhagen in December of 2009. And it's the year leading up to that, because he gets elected maybe 18 months prior to that and really is like rallying to get, he basically needs India and China and the US and like even Brazil
and some of the African continent as well.
But mainly those four countries to, you know, sign this thing to reduce emissions. The number that they want is 350 million parts per, I forget what that is. But
the carbon offload.
Yeah, 350 is the number
that
he's trying to go to get them to agree. And so it's this battle to get this happen. And
because what people don't understand is environmentally, whatever one country does, it affects everybody.
It affects everybody.
Right.
And his frustration is like India and China are saying stuff like, well, the U.S. got to be all dirty for so many years. Why don't we get our shot? And he's like, my country will be underwater. And he says, Manhattan is at the same sea level
as the Maldives. Yeah.
So
it's the exact same position.
Everybody needs to wake up to this. Yeah. Like South Florida, Manhattan are going to be underwater if we don't do something about this. And he's this very impassioned guy. And you get to see, you know, it was intriguing for me. I can see some people might go, oh, it gets slow at parts. It's intriguing for me because you see him like in the trenches, what international politics is like and what he's got to position this and he's got his team.
And he's a small country.
He's
a tiny little vacation.
Yeah, it's a vacation country.
Yeah,
you know?
They have no other natural resource other than tourism dollars, right?
That's it.
No
and
oil.
Fishing.
And
fishing.
Fishing.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's it.
No oil. Did they show at the Copenhagen thing where they did the their government session all in scuba gear underwater?
Yeah, yeah. They showed him. That? He did his session underwater.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that.
And everyone's at desks underwater.
And they're all in scuba gear and they're doing political, like what it's going to be in 20 years to run the Maldives. They'll all be in scuba gear at their desks.
He does his cabinet meeting underwater.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of stuff he does. The movie poster, if you go to IMDb, is him standing. And they did this ad where he's talking and it starts as a close up. And then he's like, if we don't address this, and they peel back and he's in a suit and tie, but the water is up to like his mid thigh.
Oh, is that right?
You know? Oh, and good. It's an important thing. And he makes a great issue. You know, he does his interview in America, and of course, the American journalist says, well, what about people don't think climate change is real? They dispute it. He goes, well, there's people who think the world is flat and we didn't land on the moon, so who cares?
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow. Yes, you're right. You're right. The people who are like, the Holocaust never happened. I don't give a fuck what you think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You either are crazy or you've got some fuckbag agenda. Either way, suck it. Let's try to save the world.
Yeah, totally.
So it was really, you know, it's...
Well, I love the, there was a political cartoon that was going around Facebook that was hilarious. This guy was standing up to Congress. He's like, well, wait, what if global warming ends up being a hoax and we've created a better world for nothing?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, there's no global warming. Now the world's just cleaner and better and more efficient. And there's less garbage.
Yeah. Oh, damn you.
Oh, you tricked us again, you hippies.
You damn hippies.
You got rid of those five islands of floating garbage that are in the oceans of this planet.
That's right.
Mostly plastic.
That's right.
So anyway, it's a well-made little documentary. And this guy is intriguing, engaging guy, and you know, some of the stuff at the, you know, they always flash the statistics, they're like up to date statistics and stuff. I don't want to reveal any of that, but
spoiler alert.
And then is there a fundraising thing at the end of it going with
I believe if you go to islandpresident.com you can get up to date information on what's going on,
right?
It's worth seeing, and it's just a well made documentary, you know,
yeah.
Very straightforward. they don't try to do like any kid stays in the picture type stuff, which I love. It's great. But I think what they're thinking, my guess is, at least their thinking was, this is such a straightforward issue that we cannot mess around with. We're just going to bam. This is it. This is who this guy is. This is what he's fighting for. And so it's really good. It's worth seeing. I saw it at a Art House, the Landmark in LA. So it's getting a limited theatrical release, but I'm guessing it's something you're going to probably have to download or stream or something like that. But it's worth watching.
Awesome.
It's worth watching for sure.
Cool. Should we go right into DVDs?
Let's go right into DVD, my friend.
Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol.
Woohoo, Brad Bird.
I like this film. It was enjoyable.
Well, the Iron Giant director and one of the Pixar guys.
And he used to work in The Simpsons.
Yes.
Yeah. And when he was 14, he had like the senior Disney guy take him under his belt. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
He was a kid and he went to Disney. And then one of the last senior animators. And he knew that all the old animators were going to get kicked out. So he taught this kid. He's sort of like the Jedi Mind-Meld just before the old Disney guys die. And it's all put on Brad. It's like, you are the last of the animators to know the stuff that we knew. And that was him as like a teenager. And then he took off with it.
I got to say, I've seen all of the Mission Impossible movies. They've always been fun. I never walked away from any of them like, that sucked. But
really?
The
second one was awful.
Yeah, but I don't know.
There's still lots of action.
I never went into any of them with any high expectations. I just was like, okay, it's Tom Cruise running around. But all of them were forgettable.
Right.
Sure.
But this one is good, actually. Yeah. Ghost Protocol was like, there's some cool stuff in there. And I like Jeremy Renner a lot. And I thought they used him well. And
I wonder if they'll make another one.
Right up until the Russian arm dealer. Now I could spoil it because it's on DVD. Fuck you up. So right till then, because he saves that Russian guy in the top of the jailbreak scene. And then you think, okay, well, this has got to pay off in the third act to get him out. And then he's just the cousin of the other Russian art. And there's just one scene. And then it's like, that was like, what? That should have been written. That guy should have come in the third act. And that should have been the thing to get them to New Delhi and the BMW chase and the... See? This is all I do. I hate movies, and then I go, I can fix this. It's armchair quarterback. That's a dick move.
Now, speaking of a dick move, shame is... come on.
Oh, Chris Mancini, ladies and gentlemen.
It's the connective tissue.
Fast Bender's cock.
Yes.
2 hours of it. I didn't actually see it.
No, I didn't see it either.
I didn't either.
No.
I'm probably going to see it. I heard good things about it.
Yeah. I heard it's not a date movie.
It's not. No, it's one of those it's the worst first date movie I'm guessing you could go on.
And another spoiler alert about our show with Janine. Janine kept calling him Fast Binder.
Fast Binder?
Yeah, and that was driving Doug Benson crazy.
Fast Binder.
Yeah.
Fast Whatever. Binder. He is a fast binder. It's called granola. I don't know.
But I heard the ladies like this movie, The Shame.
Well, because he's naked.
He's naked. But it's not, you know, then you would like Bad Lieutenant because, you know, you see Harvey Keitel naked. Is that the naked you're looking for?
No.
I'm just reminding me of I went on a date like when I was a teenager and saw Angel Heart.
Oh, that's a good date
first
movie.
Date. And there's this like blood sex scene with the devil, and it was the most uncomfortable thing.
So you want to go back to my place?
Yeah, I think I was like a virgin or something.
Oh, my God.
And then just watching Robert De Niro eat an egg.
Yeah, eat an egg, creepy. Louis Cifier. Even your name's a dime store joke. Yeah.
Right. I know who I am.
All right, so coming out this week.
Wow, that you guys could quote that.
Like, yes, I know. Send us your favorite Angel Heart quotes, folks. Put those on the Facebook fan page.
And we are going to riff on it. Angel Heart. All this week. Oh, my God.
Think Like a Man, premiering this week. This is based on Steve Harvey's relationship book.
Uh-huh. Like I said, you take your stand-up act and make a movie
Make a movie
well,
out
no,
of it.
First you make a book.
Oh, right.
And then you sell the rights.
Right, exactly.
So the Comedy Film Nerd Guide to Movies, we're going to make that into a feature film.
So easy.
There's got to be a way to do it.
That's right. That's awesome. Think Like a Man.
Yes.
And that's going to be funny? Anybody read the book?
No.
No. I don't know how it's going to be.
I don't even think
I saw the trailer for this. You know, it just looks like I don't know.
Is it like a Valentine's Day kind of thing where it just goes through different relationships?
Yeah, I guess. Just yeah. women and men fighting about who should, how they should date or something.
How they should act like a woman and think like a man.
Sure.
Is that what,
that's right.
Yeah. Mm. I like how they shortened the title, too, because the book is that's the whole book title.
Act like
yeah,
a woman.
So I'm like, oh, too long. Mm. Too long for the movie.
And guys won't see anything that says act
yeah,
like a woman.
Yeah, yeah, you can't put that in the title.
Too gay.
The next one. The next one is The Lucky One.
Oh, Zac Efron.
Oh, he's a dreamboat.
He really needed to return to the big screen.
This is just The Notebook Iraq War. Basically, is what this is.
Pretty close.
Notebook was World War II. This is basically Notebook.
A Marine travels to North Carolina after serving 3 tours in Iraq and searches for the unknown woman he believes was his good luck charm during the war.
If she was unknown, how did he know she was?
It was like a picture or something. It was like the kind of the plot device, and then he goes to try to find her.
Because nothing says a good movie like stalking.
Yes.
PSCD. Like,
he's post-traumatic stress disorder stalker.
You got me through the war. Who are you?
Get away from me. Ah! You saved my life. Get out of here. Yeah,
it'll be exciting. That's it. That's the trailer for the film.
That was pitched actually in the room. I like it. Give me 25 pages. That's how I look at that.
And the next movie is Chimpanzee. This is a documentary actually from the Planet Earth guys.
Oh wow!
Yes, I just saw Jane Goodall on the Daily Show talk about this. And so this the mother gets killed by a jaguar. While the film crew's filming. Wow. That's the thing. The film crew from Planet Earth is filming there. And then little Oscar, who's the baby monkey, unbelievably normally goes to other females in the tribe, and all the other females have other babies, so they're pushing little Oscar away. And finally, the senior head male of the monkey tribe adopts him. And it's this relationship of this elder monkey male, which adopts a tiny baby, which never happens in the wild, and it just happened to happen while all these HD cameras are completely focused on the
stuff. So it was like Brad Bird and the Disney animators.
Exactly. Right. This is the metaphor. It is Brad Bird and being taken in by the Disney animators. And it's cute monkeys and they animate.
This is put out by Disney. Tim Allen narrates it. But it's not really a Disney movie. Like you were saying, it's the Planet Earth guys and Disney's just distributing
it. And apparently the first week of sales, the money goes to Jane Goodall Foundation.
Oh, great.
Great.
Yeah. So there you go.
Now, the next movie is The Moth Diaries. This is limited. And this is one of those weird... girl coming of age boarding school, possibly one as a vampire movie.
Yeah, it has the creepy kid, you know,
vibe to it. And you're like, oh, sexual awakening, and is she a vampire? And I'm having weird dreams. Why are you touching me?
When I was a teenager,
I love your neck.
Yeah,
I don't understand teen lit at all. Because even when I was a teenager, I wasn't reading teen lit. I was reading like 1984, like the classics to get them out of the way.
Right.
Any Hardy Boys mysteries, maybe?
Grade 3, I had a teacher read me a Hardy Boy mystery. I was bored to tears.
I read all of the like S.E. Hinton books. I read The Outsiders and all that, which is, I guess, the closest teen stuff. That was kind of teeny.
Teeny? Little teeny.
No vampires or werewolves, though.
No.
Yeah.
It was greasers fighting. It was good stuff. And then I read, The Lord of the Flies, which is...
We had to read that.
Yeah.
But
which is more of a survival manual.
Did you
manual.
Read Lord of the Rings at that point? That's where you...
Yeah, that was on there. I remember The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings. They were on there. And
on
then,
the teen
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when teen lit now seems to be so dumbed down and like, who do you like? I don't know. Who do you like? It seems very unliterature.
You know what it is?
You mean it seems very unliterary, is yes, what you're saying. Yeah.
Unreadable.
Non-literature-fied.
The good news is you've got stuff like The Hunger Games, which is amazing teen literature.
Is it?
It's The Hunger Games books are really fantastic.
But isn't
fiction.
It a dystopian future where the kids are...
Aren't
you watching a movie where you're watching kids get murdered in a dystopian future? Like, isn't the movie... Isn't watching the movie as... bad as what the movie's world is portraying?
Well, that's post-postmodern. That's a little...
exactly.
That's too many posts
I'd
in
love
the modern.
I think kids have to murder each other. I think it's a good future.
And it's a...
I'm calling that my high school.
Yeah. It was the other one is... what was the one, the Japanese movie? Battle Royale. That was the first one.
Which apparently was taken from a Stephen King novel that he wrote with teens killing each other.
Wow.
Yeah, that he bitched that Battle Royale was taking elements from his book. So
that I don't remember. I've never heard that before. That's another. All right.
Interesting.
Dean Haglund with another conspiracy theory.
I got a million of them. Or that I've been told a million of them. Right. Maybe that's they're not mine, per se.
Well, that is our show, ladies and gentlemen.
Look at that.
Always exciting when Dean stops by.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks again for being on the show. So once again, tell the peeps where they can find about all your business that's going on.
Let's see. Go to DeanHagelin.com. There's some business there. And then Kickstarter. Look for Shock and Awesome. In with the N, like in sync, you know, hilarious. And get in on board, get some original artwork. It'll go up in value.
Now, how much longer do you have on the Kickstarter?
I did 45 days because I blew up my database accidentally. So I gave me 15 days to re-find everybody on emails. So 45 days. So I think I got about 20 days remaining.
Sweet.
So
and what's your goal?
$7,000.
Oh, that's you can that's make
easy.
That. Yeah,
that's easy.
Yeah, if you guys, what you did millions.
We
yeah.
did. If you idiots can raise 24 grand, then yeah, I can raise seven.
Seven. That should be hard.
You guys are really dumb. Graham doesn't even know how to speak correctly.
Did I say that? I didn't say that. It's always a joy being on this show, you guys.
And also, truth is out there, guys. Many of you have downloaded it. If you haven't already, it's an awesome film. That's on our site, so check that out.
Yes, and also, Dean does two chapters in the Comedy Film Nerds book that will be out soon. He does sequels, trilogies, and franchises, and also
I know a lot about.
Yes, and also drama. So they're fantastic
that
chapters.
I know nothing about.
Yeah.
awesome.
And we appreciate you guys. Like we're talking about in the store, you guys are really pre-ordering the book. Remember, Free Woot Monkey with a book pre-order. And we appreciate you guys supporting everything in the store, including the donations. And you guys have been really great. It's been really helping us out and keeping everything going.
All right. My tour dates. I will be recording a Doug Loves Movies at Cobb's in San Francisco this Thursday, April 19th at 8 p.m. Tickets still available for that. And then we're doing a 10:30 show, a countdown to 420. we will count down 10 like on New Year's Eve.
No way.
That's at 10:30, and that's at the Punchline in San Francisco.
Oh, fantastic.
And then the shows in Seattle on the 20th are sold out. But we will be at the Wow Hall in Eugene, Oregon, April 21st. And then Chris and I and nerd writer Alan Havey will all be at the Improv at Harrah's in Las Vegas, April 24 through 29.
That'll be great. In fact, we're going to record a podcast there because Alan Havey just came back from the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival, which he was covering for us. Yeah. So we're going to, he loved it. He had a blast. And
I always wanted to go to that.
He said it's absolutely fantastic.
He was just in heaven.
Yeah, he's going to write some articles on the site for it. And we're also going to talk about it next week on the podcast.
Awesome. Also, I will be headlining Laughing Skull in Atlanta, May 17 through 20. That's it.
That's everything,
That's our show, guys.
Thank you very much, guys. A joy as always.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank the NSA for listening.
Yes.
And here's some more. Bomb, terror, conspiracy.
No, don't do it.
Dean, no.
Make sure it gets called out.
Don't say that. Al Jazeera. No.
Why did you say that?
This is all screened.
We're going to get 10,000 emails going. It's taking a lot longer to download your episode.
Everything just got wiped off.
Yeah.
Everything's done.
Show.
Yeah. Oh, and thanks to there's an ambulance crew in North Minneapolis with Elias, their ambulance people helping everyone out. They listen to the show. Thank you very much, guys. I forgot to do that at the top of the show. So thanks for saving lives.
Yeah.
And now the NSA is following you. So thank you, Dean Haglund. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember
Han shot first.
NSA.